you for listening. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn. Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our land. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Tuesday, and it is the 31st of August. 31st of August, Tuesday, 2004. Alan Watt is back with us again tonight, and we are going to pick up right where we left off last night. I want to share a very nice thing with you here before we begin. This was emailed to me. I don't know who wrote it. It says it's called Perspectives. One day a father of a very wealthy family took his son on a trip to the country with the firm purpose of showing his son how poor people live. They spent a couple of days and nights on the farm of what would be considered a very poor family. On their return from the trip, the father asked, "How was the trip?" "It was great, Dad." "Did you see how poor people live?" the father asked. "Oh, yeah." "So, tell me, what did you learn from the trip?" The son answered, "I saw that we have one dog and they have four. We have a pool that reaches to the middle of our garden, and they have a creek that has no end. We have imported lanterns in our garden, and they have the stars at night. Our patio reaches to the front yard, and they have the whole horizon. We have a small piece of land to live on, and they have fields that go beyond our sight. We have servants who serve us, but they serve others. We buy our food, but they grow theirs. We have walls around our property to protect us. They have friends to protect them." The boy's father was speechless, and then his son added, "Thanks, Dad, for showing me how poor we are." Isn't perspective a wonderful thing? Makes you wonder what would happen if we all gave thanks for everything we have instead of worrying about what we don't have. Appreciate every single thing you have, especially your friends. Alan, thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on.
Hey, that song, our song, Sweet Liberty, is part of the plan. It's in our hands. Mm-hmm. Or is it a state of mind?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think?
It depends whose plan. and back to the perspective. Where are you looking upon it from?
Yeah, well, I was thinking, is it a state of mind?
Yeah, well...
In this world, mm-hmm. we have to be someplace where it's free and...
Well, that's it, yeah. That's the last bastion, is your mind itself.
Uh-huh.
You have privacy most of the time inside your own head. If you use your own head, that is.
Yes.
Most people open up their heads to all the media and the incessant sound that's put out there for us to absorb. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, very few people use the private space that they have.
Well, time is precious, and then it's time we thought about giving time for that, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah. Unfortunately, again, people are trained to get up in the morning and turn the radio on. And some people today can't go to sleep without a radio or TV on.
Yes, I know.
And it's the greatest gift you have, is the ability to think. And yet we give it away so easily.
And it's in the silence where most of the really fruitful thinking is done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Well, last night, you know what, you know the note I wrote here?
Uh-huh.
Organism, red hair. And I circled it, and we were going to pick up. Will you refresh me and our listeners, but maybe just me, exactly, we were talking about, you were talking about, well, just say what you were. Don't let me try to guess it here.
Well, we're talking about royal dynasties and aristocracies that rule over peoples. They're viewed from the people's standpoint as belonging to them, but in reality they're not, because these rulers have never interbred with the people they rule over.
And are they the ones you said that had red hair?
In Egypt they were.
Egypt,
yeah, they
that's where we were.
Yeah. And they have opened some of the tombs there and actually found, you know, the shreds of red hair.
And you said they had... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and the black wigs that they wore on top of it.
And blue eyes and green eyes.
Yeah, and you'll see that on many of their statues, in fact, to the higher pharaohs and the nobility.
In Egypt.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, see, that doesn't fit... I mean, I know you've already said that the rulers are never the same nationality as, you know, those they rule over,
uh-huh.
But that sounds like the white race.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, is it?
Well, it's definitely a white race. And again, it goes back into the legends of the super white race that were almost albino in the beginning. And that goes back to the ancient mystery religion of the ones who were cast here to the earth. And the bodies, the first bodies that they created for themselves were basically pure albino. And you find traces of the same story with the Greeks talking about the troglodytes that lived inside caves and inside mountains with the pinkish eyes and the blonde hair and very white skin. And then, of course, in the Old Testament, they use the same term, but in different language, for troglodyte. They call them the Horites. And the Horites were the people who lived in the mountains and in caves in the north of Israel. And the tribe of Manasseh was given that area next to them, and they interbred with the troglodytes. And the tribe of Manasseh, whose emblem, by the way, is the eagle with holding the arrows in one hand and the olive branch in the other.
Oh my, that sounds familiar.
Doesn't it? Yeah. They came back after interbreeding over a century or so with these people as a very fierce, warlike people who made war on the rest of Israel at one point. And they had red hair and blue or green eyes.
So I want you to know that's very confusing to me.
Yeah.
Maybe to some of our listeners, or maybe all of them, because there's this talk, and in all appearance, the white race is being done away with.
Uh-huh.
It's being mingled and mixed.
Yeah.
And if that was the royalty or the elite,
mm-hmm.
Well, what has happened? How did this all get switched around? Or what am I missing here, Alan?
Well, I think that the different different races or creeds, you might say, were interbred until they obtained those specific races, including what we think of as the white race, not the actual troglodytes or these albino types.
Or the elite.
But or the ones that we see visibly as the elite, but the originators of this, the ones who created their own bodies, they were cast to earth, you know. I think they created the different races, and the white man was to be the worker bees.
But if they were white, Alan.
Yeah.
Is that God creating man in His image?
Oh no, this wasn't God creating man in His image.
I said that facetiously.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they were the gods or the so-called gods,
uh-huh.
and they created a white race,
yeah.
To be the laborers, that sounds just like that thing in the Bible that says, in the beginning, God, well, how He let us make man in our image.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, does that have anything to do with that?
Very probably, because I've no doubt that particular religion was put out there as a control mechanism and over the bulk of the people, and for an esoteric religion for those in the know.
Wait, can you explain to me how it is the people who claim and believe that the white man is the true, quote, chosen, and we could get into that part later, but that it was, they've done bloodline studies, or they've studied under somebody who gave them bloodline studies, and they have deduced and concluded, without a doubt in their own minds, I think, that the chosen ones that are the real Hebrews, the real Israelites, and they're white.
Chosen by
and they're white. Well, that I said we could get into that after.
Yeah.
We could,
yeah.
The chosen thing, but where do they come up with the bloodlines that would trace the, quote, white race back to the people back there that are allegedly of the Anglo-Saxon, Nordic, whatever?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Can you tell me, I mean, is there evidence of that? Because they really live by it, Alan.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Well, is there evidence of that? All I'm asking is the bloodline thing.
Uh-huh.
Is there evidence that some of those tribes over there at that time were white?
Judging from today's, when you compare present DNA samples with people from the Middle East, there's really no connection.
There is no connection.
No.
Well, but see, what they, what I understand, the way they believe it, is that those lost tribes were the ones that left.
Yeah.
And they were the real chosen, and they, you know, migrated out of that area, and yeah. that today, that is us.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard that same story. In fact, they also claim that, some of the on the exodus from Egypt, some of them left much earlier, and left by ship, and they were also supposedly some of the white ones.
Have you read historical information that would confirm that?
It's so mixed with legend at that stage that
yeah.
it's hard to get any proof.
Yeah, right.
You get many believers because they want to believe it, but the actual evidence is hard. It's very hard to pick up on.
Uh-huh. Do you want to get into the chosen one thing?
Yeah, the chosen, well, I mean, it's... see, all religion is elitist to begin with, because it doesn't matter who you're following, you believe that you've been chosen to follow it, and you're now one of the chosen. Whether you're a Buddhist even, you know.
Well, but I'm talking about that in the Old Testament, Jehovah, which
mm-hmm.
I understand the name is really Yahweh,
mm-hmm.
Has said that when I made a covenant with Abraham and Jacob and Isaac,
uh-huh.
He knew me only as Lord God Almighty, but I am going to take, to me, you will be known as Jehovah, or my name is, I'm going to, shoot, I had that thing down pat, but anyway, he said, you know me by the name Jehovah, okay?
Yeah.
And then he said, I am going to take you to be my people, and I will be to you a God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I'm getting at, the chosen.
Yeah, it's a selection process by someone who claims to be a God, as you say, a God.
Yeah, a God.
And in the present-day mystery religion, as in the ancient one, it's the same one, those that attain supposedly the all of the experiences of the degrees literally call themselves gods. So in a sense, something, I'm sure, somebody did appear to them and say, yeah, I'm your new god.
Uh-huh.
You have the qualities of the followers I want, and I'll let you into the secrets, basically. Yeah. It's never been any different. In present-day Kabbalism, anyone who gets to the top in any profession, even money lending, if you were the top man, you have achieved godhood in the Kabbalah.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm focusing on is the fact that it is a common, or not common, but with a lot of people, well, many, many people, who take the Bible or the Old Testament all the way to the back cover,
uh-huh.
that every word in it is the divine inspired word of God,
yeah.
and that our Creator,
mm-hmm.
the Creator of all that is, would choose a particular group of people.
Yeah,
that is so insane to me.
Well, it is insane because it's nonsense. What you're getting there is the beginning, really, of a system being born, and a mystery religion which would run the system from behind. That's what that was.
Huh.
You know.
Well, the thing is, these chosen people were told that they were going to rule every inch of land that their feet step on,
mm-hmm.
and that kings will bow to their feet, and
yeah.
strangers will tend their vineyards,
mm-hmm.
and for a quote Christian
uh-huh.
To want that,
uh-huh.
want people bowing to you and carrying you here and there, and it also said there that you will loan to nations and borrow from none,
uh-huh.
and I that just doesn't fit.
Well, it does if you're into a, you're actually creating a takeover corporation, and that's all it is a takeover corporation.
You mean Jehovah took over from another god?
Well, whoever came up with the idea,
whoever invented it,
had a good idea of the takeover business.
Are you being serious here?
Oh, yeah.
The priesthood, are you saying that the priesthood battled within themselves, within their ranks? Is that what you're saying?
There's no doubt that that the priesthood knew. I mean, things did not begin with the Hebrews. We know that.
Right, yes.
The world has been here much, much, much longer. It's been through many empires that are lost in time and lost in history. And there have been many bids by the evildoers, you might call them, on the planet to take the whole world into their own control and under their own control for complete and total control, as we see happening today.
Mm-hmm.
But something, the real Creator always steps in at the grand finale and seems to lay them low again. And hence they go into hiding, they go back to the mystery religions because they're hunted, they have to keep secrecy. And they work steadily and patiently, intergenerationally for again many thousands of years to try to take over the whole thing again.
This is their history as they tell it?
This is their history, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And
when you say the real Creator steps in,
yeah,
that's as though saying that our Creator actively gets involved in what's going on. That
yeah.
is hard. That's beyond my ability to comprehend.
Yeah. The Creator, long before the so-called mystery religions, it was said that everyone on earth, the natural people who lived here, could converse freely on a one-to-one basis with their Creator. There was no priesthood. And eventually, over a period of time, this Creator left the world running like a clock, basically. And then they claim that there was a war between these other beings and the Creator, and these beings were cast here.
I see.
And they are the ones who started the whole ball rolling of trying to conquer everything through the use of science, basically, leading to a definite end where they would control everything in the world, on the world, and ultimately above the world, which is part of the main goal as well. And they've tried at least 7 times, according to the Brahmins,
yeah,
to do this. But the secret is that the Creator himself puts his fate into the lives of some people during that period. And in other words, if there's something worth saving here or changing, he will come back and change it.
You know, that it sounds like. Now, are you saying this is their story?
No, this was written about in religions pre-existing the Hebrews.
Okay, yeah. When I say they, I'm just saying the priesthood, the wherever this thing originated, mm-hmm. because what it's saying then is that the Creator comes and goes. And if mm-hmm. that source of all that is in within everything,
mm-hmm.
the Creator can't go anywhere.
mm-hmm.
The Creator
yeah.
is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, what they used to say, too, is that the impulses or thought or even your own spirit, basically, which comes to you if your soul is searching for it,
yes.
and merges with you into one, body, soul, and spirit,
mm-hmm.
Then you are basically now in tune with the emanations that come from the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they used to phrase it.
I see.
And
but then if every cell in our body
mm-hmm.
is a part of creation,
mm-hmm.
then that life would be, it'd just be. It
yeah,
wouldn't have be something we would have to call down or call in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can certainly deny it.
Yeah.
We can turn our back on it, or figuratively, of course, but we cannot be separated from our Creator.
Well, we can actually cut ourselves off from the emanations.
Well, sure. I understand that, Alan.
Yeah.
In other words, by denying it and cutting mm-hmm. ourselves off from it, it's as though it isn't. But
that's
my
right.
point is, it isn't that the Creator goes somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's that we make a choice.
We do make a choice.
We make a choice to not be aware, consciously aware, that the Creator is within us,
mm-hmm.
and there is nothing that is going to change that.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we believe it or not, it doesn't change it. And I do understand that for the individual who doesn't believe that or know it,
mm-hmm.
Then it would be a separation, because the separation is in the mind.
Yeah.
It's a perceived...
Well, it's a choice, as I say.
Yes.
It's a choice.
And then I could understand
mm-hmm.
we would be humming along at a totally different vibratory level, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, at that level, there probably would be no sense, no awareness of the connection.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how it... I just can't... I don't grasp it any other way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not resisting. Do you understand, Alan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just, that's the only thing that makes any sense. So
mm-hmm.
I'll let that go. So this is their story then.
Well,
it's their history.
They put a certain spin on things. Since they write most of the history, they will always let certain truths out, but with a different spin on it,
mm-hmm.
As to the reasons or the wherefores or so or whatever, to suit themselves. But the fact is, they are always terrified during the grand finale, as they like to call it, where they build their towers of Babel, and whether it's the One, which is the tower, or the UN, which is the French for one,
uh-huh.
it's all the same thing. It's a boast that they are virility through the generations, and by that they also mean the spiritual virility that they claim that they have. Through their own willpower, they have planned the world for thousands of years, and are now achieving their
uh-huh.
their goal.
And their willpower is not stronger than ours.
It certainly isn't. In fact, for some reason or other, they have much less, really, real power, you might say.
Because they're misusing it, aren't they, Alan?
Well, it's more than just that.
Is
You can achieve spiritual awareness, you might say, by yourself. If your soul is seeking it,
yes.
you will achieve it. Or you can try and take the shortcut of the world, which is to join a Freemasonic society in one of its many thousands of names,
mm-hmm.
And try and get it by degrees, which is basically taking entities into you with each degree that you take. And these entities, they are the ones who were cast here in the first place, they are imprisoned here, so their prison is the world. So they have a certain amount of power within the world,
sure.
Not total power, but they can't go beyond the world. That's what I'd like to say. They are imprisoned. They cannot go beyond the world.
So
that's why their boast has always been to conquer space and rise higher than the Creator. Because this world and its atmosphere is their prison.
You had said one time that the creatures that we see, that we believe are in control, believe that they are gods. But the ones who actually are in control know of the power that is within each and every one of us.
Yeah.
Because they know that there is a higher power way beyond this physical earth.
Oh, sure.
And that they're scared to death that they're going to... Too many people might wake up to the fact that we don't have to twist ourselves in a pretzel and pray to a saint or pray to Mary to communicate with our Creator.
Yeah.
And that it is within us, and it all is all... See, that is the message that I see that Jesus was trying to get across, Alan.
Well, he also taught the way to do it, because the main way to do it is through... basically self-analysis of one's life.
Know yourself.
And it's an ongoing thing all through your life. And it's strangely enough, it's when you're looking at yourself that spiritual awareness comes to you.
That's amazing.
You see?
That's amazing.
Because sincerity is needed for it to occur.
Because we're looking at ourselves because we want to walk in that path that was laid down before us and shown to us. And that's when we begin. I'm looking at it right now, Psalm 139.
Mm-hmm.
Search me, Father. Know my heart. Test me. Know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. That is my fervent prayer, Alan.
Yeah.
It is.
Mm-hmm. But sincerity is needed to for that to occur.
Yes.
When people join, as I say, Masonic type societies, and go through formulas and rituals where you sort of earn your degree or your demon as you work your way up there, and you get the fruits of the world through unmerited favor, you get the job, you get the business, you get etc. etc. That's for the people who belong to this world.
Uh-huh.
They have chosen that.
Uh-huh.
So any powers that they receive through even the demonic influences that are involved in it don't have the power of the Creator that's within and is also given to you by the Creator. They don't have that same kind of power.
Yes, I love that. We have to take a break here.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you will take your pen in your hand and get a piece of paper so that you can take my address down, because this broadcast is listener-sponsored. And if you are listening, if you appreciate the broadcast, the information, and the love with which it is brought to you, then you're invited to participate. And we do need your help if we're going to stay on the air. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
what in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first, and on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Alan?
Yeah?
You know the thought that occurred to me during this break, when they talk about the Creator coming back?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it occurred to me that the high hosts of heaven, spiritual beings that are not incarnate into this physical world,
mm-hmm.
being one with Creator and maybe being part of a protective shield or a whatever, that is really, in a sense, saying the same thing, isn't it?
It's similar,
the Creator,
yeah.
The Creator coming back,
mm-hmm.
because the Creator can't leave.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Creator can be anywhere. I mean, this is only one of many existences, really. We're all in Plato's cave here. You know, Plato's cave, the allegory about being born in this cave, and it has its own theories as to what this cave is, and it's their whole world. And so everything that they learn is related to this cave. And our whole culture, history, religion, and so on, has been given to us, keeps us in a mindset where we're so limited to anything beyond it. In fact, if you leave the cave, you still try and relate new things that you see or experience back to that cave.
Back to that, uh-huh.
And that's what we find today. People still, as they learn about the myth-makers of organized religion, they still try to find a view of life that still fits somehow with that view of that cave.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it stops them from really seeing what is there, what is really there, or the other thing, possibilities that are outside of there. It's like looking at everything we look at today is just composed of vibrations in different frequencies.
Yes.
The lower the frequency, the more solid it appears. The higher the frequency, the more light and transparent it seems.
Yes.
So, and time itself is simply matter, which is this cave, in motion.
Yes. In other words, time is now.
Yeah.
And you know, that is a concept I can intellectualize,
mm-hmm.
but I've never really got it.
Yeah.
I can see it intellectually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't experience that.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to experience that.
And if time, since it seems to us to be going in one direction, although we have memory of time past, because there are fixed laws here, does not mean that outside of this cave, those laws apply.
You lost me there.
Well, basically, if you were to go faster than the speed of how matter is traveling through space,
yeah.
and what we are used to,
yes.
Where would you end up? Would you still end up in a further part of that same space?
I see.
Or would you enter into a new dimension?
Dimension, uh-huh.
You see?
Yes,
and
do.
Really, past and future are simply dimensions. But one exists ghostly because it's in the past, and one sometimes bright but still a little dim because it's yet to come.
Uh-huh. And do you think that the possibility is that what happens in time right now, mm-hmm. on every single dimension affects every other dimension?
I'm sure it does.
I think it probably does.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what that calls to us, Alan? That everything we do right now means everything.
Well, it does.
Right now,
mm-hmm.
is what matters.
Mm-hmm.
Because it affects everything.
That's
it is
right.
We had talked about each of us, all of us, you know, how we feel separate because we have these separate bodies,
mm-hmm.
and yet we are all one, and we are of all of one mind. And you said this one time, and I loved it. I could literally see it, a thought that we have or a word that we speak right here, because it is in the mind, and we are all of one mind. Somebody on the other side of the earth would get that thought.
Yeah, and again, the controllers know this themselves, and they practice this. Arnold Toynbee, who was a philosopher and a teacher for Rhodes Scholars and very active in creating global governance, gave a speech, I think it was in Denmark in 1932, and he said a thought that originates in someone's mind at the moment, an original thought is instantly broadcast all over the world.
Yes.
And he said, people who are naturally, we're all psychic, he said, and that's something they try to stop people from thinking about.
Yes, and you can't be psychic either if you're listening to the radio all the time.
Uh-huh.
You can't hear anything.
He said that people all over the world will pick up that thought out of the ether as soon as it's thought, instantly. And that thought can influence them in their lives from then on. It's an original creative type of thought.
It's quite a responsibility then, isn't it, Alan?
Oh, it is.
For each and every one of us.
Yep.
At every moment.
It goes back to what we spoke about earlier, how they've conditioned the public through the trick of the elect, which is electric, to get up in the morning and listen to radio and noise going to work with that radio on and watch TV at night and get downloaded with programs, but they don't sit in the silence and simply think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's intentional. The world we're living in today was planned that way, because to totally control the world and everyone in it, you must have a predictable society where everyone is predictable. Each individual is predictable. The enemy of global governance, which is really global slavery, the enemy is individualism. The individual is the enemy. And the creative individual is the number one enemy. And it's those who can use their mind and who can go into realms within their mind and broadcast thoughts which are picked up. And you find it out in your own life, because people in your own company will suddenly say what you've just thought. That's common, the more you get experienced within it. You know? So they're terrified of this happening, because they will start losing control.
Mm-hmm.
And
they do not resonate. They do not resonate to the love vibration.
They don't have any love in them. In fact, they are creatures of instinct, you know.
And parasites.
Well, the parasites too, because they could not exist outside of this system they've created.
And they exist on the negative information, the negative emotions, vibrations,
uh-huh.
That they create. Well, they within us,
uh-huh.
and they suck it up. They live on it.
They create. When you go into history, you should ask yourself why. Why hasn't one generation had a full generation from birth to death
without a war?
Without war, without a plague coming upon them,
uh-huh.
a famine being forced generally because of a war,
mm-hmm.
Threat of economic collapse, etc., etc. This is all intentional, because to keep power and maintain power, you must always create the chaos.
Yeah.
And
especially
chaos,
if you're living off that chaotic energy.
Yes, fear and anger are the easiest emotions to create. It's much easier to be angry than.
How about hatred?
Hatred.
Same thing.
It's the same thing, yeah.
I was listening to a religious broadcast one night,
mm-hmm.
and some man called into the show and said, we have to hate. In other words, we're supposed to hate.
Uh-huh.
And maybe we hate our enemies or something.
Yeah.
And this pastor said that we can't have love without mm-hmm. having hate.
Yeah.
And that, geez, talk about duplicity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pushing it. I have had people ask me sometimes, how can I not hate them? I
yeah.
said, I choose not to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know they want us to hate Alan. And
yeah,
they want us to be angry.
Yeah. Yeah. And it certainly is an emotion which is fed upon. That's why sacrifice was always used so mightily in ancient times. Those inanimate people, of course, and animals too, they know when they're going to be killed, and there's a terror goes up amongst them, whether it's animal or human, and it's the build up of the terror prior to the sacrifice that supposedly the deity
gives their
feeds
power
on, you know,
gets their power.
Mm-hmm. So this is still going on today.
Yes.
If you look at the incredible sacrifices to bring global governance, the planned World War One, the planned World War Two, and all the wars since, and the present ongoing ones, and the billions of pints of blood that's been spilled for these sacrifices to attain this oneness, as they call it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's incredible, but it has been done. And that's why the United Nations building was built on the largest slaughterhouse in the United States.
It was.
And that land is all ritually prepared for the UN. So that was no mistake, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, they need blood and sacrifice, terror and fear before they can build their
mm-hmm.
structure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that gets, I'm going to stop. I want you to continue where you want to go.
Well, it's, as I say, that we're dealing with this world with a battle to retain or even find your own individuality rather than conformity, forming to something that the priests have made for you, which is conformity. And, how can people find themselves if they don't even know where to start looking? They go to organized religions hoping to find themselves, and they simply become followers of a preset bunch of rules and regulations and dogmas, and they're led right back into the ways of the world, and they follow the rules that they're given,
uh-huh.
Which the elite have given them, because all religions are meant to make people obey governance. And it doesn't matter what religion we're talking about here.
Right. We have a caller here. Would you like to take the call another time? Not to lose your train of thought.
It's okay. I'll probably get back on it.
Okay. Oh, good. Please don't lose your train of thought. Maria, you're on, honey.
Yeah. From what I'm understanding is that these secret societies, they're aiming and in achieving whatever they want to achieve, they need blood sacrifice.
Yeah.
Yes, he said yes.
Talking about blood sacrifice.
Yes, he said yes, Maria.
Huh?
He said yes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And since this planet is the planet of duality. So if you have a negative, you have a positive. And I think that the choice is the individual. And like your program really makes people aware of the fact that you do choose, even if you say you don't, you just follow whatever goes, you do make a choice. And people have to understand that.
Thank you. Thank you, Maria.
Okay.
Thank you, darling.
Bye.
Yes, Alan.
Yeah. And if we go into all Masonic literature, theosophy, it's all the same. I mean, they're all branches of the same thing. They say there is no such thing, ultimately, as good or evil. It's simply the way that the force or power is applied. And this all comes from the Talmud, initially. And the Talmud initially came from Babylon, which was the ancient capital of the world, financially and otherwise. And the big question has always been, if that is the case, if it's the same force being applied, can good come out of evil? And this is part of the doctrine here that they all believe in.
Yes.
If they plan, for instance, to have a planned society of the future where everyone will live in habitat areas and conform to this new system that they're bringing in, this new way of living, how do we get the people from where they are now to there? Well, we'll use wars to do it. We could cause famines in rural areas. In other words, it can cause so many negative things which will cause death and harm to uncountless millions all over the world to achieve their goal. But they will say that out of the evil came good. So the end justified the means. So in their philosophy, there is no such thing as evil as long as it was planned by them.
And their final intent is goodness. No matter how much evil is committed, it's because it's for the good.
The good
is that what they say?
In accordance with their plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, there's a Canadian program on one night, and they went into a Hollywood party where Steven Spielberg and a few other producers were partying, and they asked three or four of them individually, do you believe in evil or the devil? And none of them believed in the devil, but they also said, Steven Spielberg said it more succinctly, he said evil is simply a moral judgment on the part of man.
Wow.
It's the same force applied one way or another, and if good can come out of it, then it's only a human judgment to call it evil.
Wow. Do you know what that reminds me of?
Uh-huh.
And I found it here in the protocols, number 3, mm-hmm. protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Yeah.
It says, out of the temporary evil, we are now compelled to commit. Out of the temporary evil we are now compelled to commit will emerge the good of an unshakable rule.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which will restore the regular course of the machinery of the national life.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you'll find that particular type of justification all through all Masonic writing.
Yeah.
And of course, that's what they mean by the allegories of understanding nature and the seasons that are opposite each other. You know, your summer and your winter, spring and fall. These are opposites. So you learn to use the same forces. That's what they mean. The same force applied at a certain point will have a disastrous effect on those whom it does affect, but out of it will come a next season, basically.
My.
As long as they plan it that way.
Aren't they wonderful and kind and loving?
Yes, and H.G. Wells, who was a main proponent and a spokesman for the Fabian Society and the British Secret Service and the Masonic groups behind them from Cambridge and Oxford universities, who supplied him with all of his material for his books, he said he wrote about the First World War before it occurred.
Yeah.
And he said it would be with Germany.
Yeah.
And right after, and he also coined the phrase, the war to end all wars. And nothing well,
okay,
like
so that means it'll be war from then on.
Well, it would be in their terminology,
right.
Certainly.
The war to end all wars. It'll be the final, mm-hmm. never-ending war.
So not only did the young men have to go out and fight for this war that was supposed to bring in peace for the world,
mm-hmm.
you see, they had to believe that they were going out to fight this war to bring peace to the world. So they were filled with this slogan wherever they went.
Yes.
And right after World War One, in one of his books, he said, well, we have formed the League of Nations, but we haven't got the world at its knees, so we'll have to have another war. I mean, this is what you're dealing with
here.
You know? But again,
this
the end justifies the means.
Exactly. In fact, that was the next sentence in that protocol I just read, or this sentence after the last.
Yeah. And even Albert Pike, there's a letter in the British Museum for many years. Many letters in the British Museum went missing when they stored them all during World War II. But it is well documented and photographed that he wrote to Lord Rothschild. And Albert Pike was the Pope of Freemasonry,
mm-hmm.
for the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about the three world wars in the late 1800s. Two with Germany, and one, the final war, would be between Zion and the Middle and Islam, which is going on right now.
Yes.
So we're simply living through a planned future or history, you might say. It's all planned in advance.
Way long ago.
And we go through such rigmarole as we watch it unfold, but the fact is it's all planned that way.
Yes, and it just occurred to me, if these are the same creatures that hid away till the next, civilization,
uh-huh.
they've had a long, long time to plan, Alan.
They have.
Think about it.
Mm-hmm. They claim in their own writings, and in the Talmud it says the same thing, that the great plan was born 4,000 B.C.
That's baloney. Don't you think it's a long... I'm talking about ages past.
Oh, I know that.
Like seven ages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot longer than 4,000 years.
Oh, sure. But I prefer to say this part of the plan was probably born...
Oh, yes.
Updated in 4,000 B.C.
Updated, yes.
And that's why every Masonic lodge has two dates... the ones we're used to, plus another one mm-hmm. with 4,000 years tacked on to it.
Oh, yes, because, you know, during the, welcoming, the AIPAC, American Israel
uh-huh.
Public Affairs Committee,
mm-hmm.
was did the welcoming at the Republican National Convention.
Uh-huh.
And they got Mayor Bloomberg from New York up there, and he was literally giving the date as 57-something or 50-something.
Yeah, well, that Rabbi Stebeck, who's on one of the other stations, also confirmed that the 4,000 B.C. is what they're told.
Right.
So, and behind after that date in all these Masonic lodges, they have the letters A.L. And A.L. stands for Anno Lucifer. It's after the fall of Lucifer.
Wow. Oh, my.
And so Lucifer, as Albert Pike said, is their god. And Blavatsky from Theosophy said the same thing.
And you said that the God of the Old Testament, Jehovah,
mm-hmm.
Yahweh, is a representative of Lucifer.
He's the God of the world.
The God of the world.
And
uh-huh.
those who follow him benefit from the things of the world.
Uh-huh. It is true. See, this is something that I've pointed out before, but I don't think I've done it maybe often enough, because everything that they are promised by this God is all of the world.
Yeah.
All good, you know, all the riches and the servants and whatever, but there is nothing said about the soul, the spirit.
No. No, no, it's all the things of the world, and Jehovah certainly blessed in the Old Testament everyone, regardless of what they did. I mean, Jacob even lied to his father and dressed like his brother to get the blessings. So he showed he was cunning, and he was like he was a
and
good liar.
Yes.
And so he was blessed for it.
And he was favored.
And so that's just like a mafia system.
Yes.
As long as it's done with cunningness and masonry.
God blessed him for cheating his brother out of his inheritance.
That's right.
Uh-huh. I remember that. Thinking,
and lying to his father.
Yeah, how insane. Yes, exactly. Deceiving his father, and he was blessed by Jehovah / Yahweh.
Yeah. So what it's showing you is the system and how to manipulate the system here for your own benefit.
And that's why people take such liberties and justify it. It's why slavery has always been justified.
Mm-hmm.
Is because in the Old Testament, slavery was accepted.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it was
those
in fact, money. The word money comes from mon, which is the Aramaic word for man.
Mm-hmm.
You counted your money by the heads that you owned. Yeah. So it's the way of the world is in the Old Testament. And you certainly gain the things off the world if you followed this Lord of the world.
I have very much, I don't think the word is enjoyed, it goes way beyond that, this conversation tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to me it's very inspiring, Alan.
Yeah, well, another thing two people seem to miss is that Jesus, whom they claim to follow, exposed the deception.
I know it.
Of the secret God.
Yeah.
When he said to the rabbis, he says, you have your father the devil.
Yeah.
And that's another word for Satan, Lucifer, you see.
And their father, of course, was the God Jehovah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Their God, their creator.
Sure.
And it just doesn't somehow seem to register with some people. We're out of time again. We're now at the hour.
Yeah.
Out of time. That's a silly, isn't it? It's a silly saying.
The 60 minutes came from Babylon.
Yeah, the 60. Well, that's for another broadcast. Will you come back tomorrow night?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. And we'll just see where we go from there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alan.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Alan will be back tomorrow night. And I hope that the conversation was as stimulating or as at least provocative, thought-provoking for you as it has been for me. Good night, dear one, and God bless you. Alan, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did I say thank you?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.